You are listening to Microchurches, a podcast for missionaries and leaders living out their God-given calling through this small expression of the church. This podcast is meant to encourage, equip, and contribute to the overall discussion of this smaller way. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy. You are listening to Microchurches, a podcast for people brave enough to be small. This is your host, Tommy Wilkerson, and in this series, we are talking about microchurches. And really, what we are getting into is a little bit of kind of getting underneath the hood, equipping microchurches, because a lot of this season has been a bit more conceptual. It's been a lot more conversation that maybe has shifted our mental paradigm as to how we see microchurches, but there hasn't really been anything that has been concrete or equipping, and we really wanted to end this season looking at that. And so, interestingly enough, we started this season with Alan Hirsch talking about MDNA and him talking about how MDNA can actually be a diagnostic across microchurches as they evaluate maybe their own barriers and things that they're encountering as they do mission. And so we wanted to take how we began this season and end this season with that same thing in mind. And so this is actually our last episode of the season. And we've talked about discipleship and social spaces. We talked about APES. But one of the things that maybe we were talking about when it came to MDNA and microchurches is just the role of organic systems. Like, what does that actually mean? One, in terms of movements, it's one thing. But then when we look at microchurches and how MDNA applies to microchurches, organic systems seemed a little bit fuzzy to us. And so I have Jeremy Stevens with us, with me, and I'm super excited because in general, Jeremy's just my right-hand man. Like, he's just great to have on this podcast. He's a brilliant thinker. And this season has been, I don't know, a little notably absent to have him on this podcast. And so Jeremy, thanks so much for cleaning up the last bit of the season with us.
Thanks, man. Always welcome to pick up your scraps.
Great. Well, I don't know. That was a lengthy intro, but I would love for you to kind of, I don't know, help us think about, okay, we're talking about organic systems. We're talking about microchurches. How does a concept like organic systems that we normally would think about as it pertains to movement relate to microchurches?
Yeah. So organic systems, at the base level, I would compare it to something like an industrial system. So if somebody could just hold in their mind, like the idea of a factory or some kind of like mechanical or mechanized kind of system, there's gears, there's particular input of resources that produce a very specific output of product, right? An organic system does have a system. There is organization, but it's more organic. You need to think something about ecology or ecosystem, but also social fabrics like families have systems that do operate. Family systems theory is like a counseling kind of arm in theory about how there is a system that's happening socially that it's not always spoken or diagrammed, but it is very different than the industrial system. Sometimes we do run churches and organizations kind of more in the mechanized or industrial kind of concept or sphere. Some things are better for that. You know, it's just like, man, you know, we need to produce a particular type of handout. And so there might be a process to produce that handout or a video or something like that. But overall, for movemental thinking, you know, large organizational structure, or, you know, or ministry, microchurch ministry, is just to produce a mechanized industrial microchurch. Just, you know, almost immediately you go, oh, that feels a little inappropriate. Mm-hmm. You know, like it could work for a minute, it could work for 6 months, but over time it just feels like it's like we feel like we're cogs in the wheel of a machine versus the life of the thing itself, right? So we want to move towards microchurches, not as something mechanized, but something more like family. You know, we want to, you know, move towards movemental thinking, more like, you know, families and social fabric, because that's something that's human. It's more in line with creationism than just the industrial ism. So So on the kind of the base level, that's kind of the big metaphors that I think we have to lean into. And then, okay, what are the natural outcroppings or ripple effects of, okay, microchurch is much more like family than kind of industrial complex. So what does that really mean? And, you know, because we should organize, we should do something, you know, there's ecosystems that are completely wild. And then there's ecosystems that are gardened. And we are gardeners in that. And so I do think that metaphor is very appropriate for us. I think Jesus kind of basically used a lot of those metaphors, agricultural metaphors. And I think there's something there with the Garden of Eden, cultivating delight, all that kind of stuff where we go, okay, so we do need to organize. There is some sort of system occurring here. What's our part to play? And that's really kind of like trying to think into that and lean into that in concrete ways. Like, okay, so it's great to talk about it at the theoretical level, but what does that look like in my microchurch? Like, we're going to get together next Sunday. What does that look like? We're going to do this outreach, you know, over Halloween or over Christmas or during the Super Bowl. What does it look like for us to operate within an organic system? You know, something more like family or ecology versus industrial or mechanized kind of product.
Yeah, which is, I don't know, it sounds like it, when you say family, it makes a lot of sense because, yeah, it's something that you can kind of grasp onto. It's a helpful image to anchor our thinking because to me, it does seem like there is this tension, right? Like we understand organic and we associate that with sort of wild, lack of structure, lack of anything. It's just, it is, it just exists. And then we understand organization and we understand process and scaffolding or whatever, but to like say organic systems and to put them together and to say there is organization and there is organic and they actually have some sort of relationship, which ecology and families, there is order and structure to it. And so it is a weird thing that like we understand it and yet it feels so weird to talk about. And I don't know, even to operate as a microchurch leader, I find that, you know, the temptation could be to lean one way or the other. Like, okay, I'm all about the process, kind of like you're talking about that industrial, you know, we have our processes, we have our operating procedures, and that's what we do. And then you have the other side of things is just like, no, we just kind of show up and we see what happens and you know, just is what it is. And there has to be some sort of balance or connection between the two. And so, I don't know, help us enter into that. How do microchurches, how can they balance that organic, organized, not be too structured, but at the same time, you do need some structure. You can't be too loose. And what does that mean for a microchurch that's trying to get itself together?
Yeah. So I think what you're touching on is there some type of relationship between organizational elements or systemic elements and just kind of like random chaos kind of stuff. There is some kind of relationship. And so the way I would put it is the organization of a microchurch needs to serve the organic life of the microchurch. So what is the life of the microchurch? The life of a microchurch is not the events of the microchurch. It's not the programs. It's not the meetings. But instead should be served and augmented by the events, programs, meetings. So every microchurch is going to have some type of gathering point, meeting, call, Bible study, worship time. They're going to do something concrete in the world. But is that what the microchurch is? No, the microchurch is the people of God. The life of the microchurch extends way beyond any singular event or prayer time or worship, you know, song, you know, type of thing. So, but there is a relationship. You know, it should be served though. That those worship songs should serve the life of the microchurch, but those worship songs are not the life of the microchurch. So. You know, another way to put it is that, you know, a microchurch is a family, and just like your family is not the family dinner. So you may have family dinner, and that might be an important gathering point, an important event, but the family dinner is not the family, but it is served. The family is served by the dinner time. Your microchurch is not its meetings, but rather is served by them. So if we get that straight in our heads and our hearts, then you know, we have already bypassed a lot of the anxiety we have about our meetings, sometimes the guilt tripping that we find, you know, you weren't there. It's just, no, the thing itself, or if we need to pivot, or the thing isn't successful, the event isn't successful, then we say, oh, this microchurch sucks or something like that. It's like, well, the microchurch might suck, but it doesn't suck because that event was poor. So there are two different things. And so we do need to separate them. And then, you know, it's the dog and the tail, it's the horse and the cart. Like, no, what's the thing that's actually alive? You know?
Yeah.
It's the life of the microchurch. And so what's the relationship between the two? Getting those paradigms straight and saying, no, there is a relationship, we should have a relationship, then allows us to then concretely plan for those organized elements. So there is going to be some sort of organized element. Same thing with family dinners or family time and family culture. You know, every family has a culture. You could not name those things, but they're still going to exist. And it actually, if you name those things, then those elements of family culture can actually serve the family. And I think we've all been in family situations where elements of family culture actually have been misunderstood to actually be the family themselves. You know, they become disproportionately more important than they should be. And all of a sudden it's like, well, we have to have this thing at Thanksgiving dinner. And if Uncle Buck doesn't, you know, pray this type of prayer at the family dinner during Thanksgiving dinner, then, you know, the whole thing is ruined, the tradition's ruined, and it shows that we're not a family anymore. You know, it's like, what are we talking about? Like, it's okay if Uncle Buck doesn't pray that specific prayer over, you know, like, what are we talking about? Like, that prayer time at that event is not the family, you know? And we've all been in family situations where we feel disjointed, like, this feels weird. Similarly, we've always been a part of Bible studies or religious events or church events where this is off. Like, this thing is no longer serving the church. It's become a substitute for church. It's become more important than the church. You know, the offering plate, we've all seen, that's why we're on this podcast, microchurches, right? It's like, we've all seen it. You know, the preaching, the pastor, the building, the budget, all that stuff has become more important and actually become a substitute for the church. So if we get those paradigms straight, I think then we can move into, you know, what are the ways that we can actually engage those organic, elements, or organized elements, you know, so that they serve, the organic.
Yeah. That's so true. I mean, we were talking about this before we even started this episode, that this is one of those ideas that it's kind of on the edge of our understanding. So you get it, and yet there's still a part of it that feels a little like, oh, I'm stretching here. Like, I'm really stretching to...
It's a bit of a mental stretch sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I'm feeling that even as we're talking about it, like, yes, I get it. Like, the family isn't the event. There's like the life of the family, and then the event serves the life of the family. And the same is true of a microchurch. And I get that because, yeah, it's like if you're just thinking the microchurch is this meeting, it is this event that's happening, then yeah, there is all this pressure to somehow have it all together, to figure it out, to have this rock star event that changes people's world. But the thing takes on a life of its own. If people hang out with each other outside of that gathering, or at least hopefully they do. You know, their friends are praying for one another. That's not happening just in the meeting, but there's a way in which we're sharing resources that doesn't take place in that meeting. And even some of the things that I've heard you say as we talk about our own network and our own movement, and is that, you know, the events themselves are good and they're important and they should serve the life of the community. But almost deceptively, the thing that matters almost just as much, if not more, is right after the meeting.
Oh, or yeah. Before what happens before and after is also the life of the microchurch.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that, it, like, even thinking about, you know, you had drawn a graph in a meeting one time, just kind of thinking about, like, the life, the highs, the lows of our spiritual life, and how all of that is part of the spiritual life. It's not that God is somehow present in the peak.
Just moments, at the mountaintop. Yeah. Yeah. The also, valley's in. Yeah. The mountain.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, as thinking about that in microchurches and organic systems, it's like, okay, it's not just these key moments, but it's also the in-between moments. It's also mm-hmm. before and after the meetings. It's mm-hmm. it's all of that.
And I would go so far, Tommy, as to say that, so like, again, we do have to just kind of wash our brains of like, kind of maybe these foreign concepts of like what God is actually doing with his people and how he's making a people who are not a people, his people, right? Mm-hmm. Is that like individual people's quiet time. So if you're committed as a group of believers in the body of Christ, like in a microchurch, part of the life of the microchurch is the individual's quiet times on Tuesday morning that they never share with the group. Mm-hmm. But that is also a part of the life of the microchurch. Just like my life with my kids that I don't share with my parents is a part of the family's life. But I didn't tell them, you know, hey, I had this conversation with my daughter, you know, like yeah. maybe I did, maybe I didn't, maybe I share that, maybe I don't share that, but it's still a part of the life. So you see what I'm saying? Like the yeah. life is much more expansive than just a singular event or just what we concretely share with each other. That's where it gets into that very kind of ethereal organic space, you yeah. know? So even when we're not together, we're still participating in the life of the people of God, and we're bound together in that way. And that person's quiet time on Tuesday morning that they never share out loud with people still somehow affects when we do get together. It still somehow like flavors the conversation and the meeting for good or for bad, you know, it's a part of the family. You know, and so even if we never make that connection, it still is. So you know, this does kind of require that mental stretch to go, wow, there's a lot more happening in the life of the microchurch than just the Bible study conversation that was kind of mediocre this week, you know?
yeah, for sure. Wow. Okay. So then how do we, I mean, you talked about this a little bit earlier, but how do we use organized elements to serve the life of the microchurch? What are ways that we can do that help us not confuse this meeting, this outreach, this dinner for the microchurch or for the life of the microchurch, but help it to serve it and not be confused with it?
Yeah. Kind of like, how do you plan a family dinner without confusing it with the family?
Right.
You know, how do we plan the meetings, the Bible studies, the prayer times, the outreaches without confusing those amazing things with the life of the microchurch? How can those things, those events and plannings and meetings can actually serve the life of the microchurch? So I, you know, having thought about this, there could be a longer list, but I think for me, the, you know, going with the family dinner metaphor, okay, how can I cultivate tables of delight? This is kind of the Garden of Eden. This is saying I'm a gardener. I can't always produce the fruit, but I can maybe cultivate a table, a family dinner table for Eden, for delight. So again, like appropriately, I can't, you know, do the mechanized industrial complex thing and produce the perfect product. All I could do is kind of cultivate a garden, you know, and then mixing that metaphor with the table, with the family dinner table. So having thought through this a little bit, like, okay, what are these appropriate relationships to have? There is a way that we can, as we plan those dinner tables, as we cultivate them, we could plan for the minimum, or we could try to make it exceptional. And this is where some details actually matter. They connect with the life of the microchurch because you've just put a little bit more thought in that. I think one of the, Diet Coke at McDonald's is a good example, because for years and years, people were like, there's just something about getting a Coke or a Diet Coke at McDonald's. It's better, and people would say this for years and they wouldn't know why. And it's because it is actually better, because Coke has thought about a few details. It's still the same product. It's still Coca-Cola, Diet Coke. It's still the same syrup, but they deliver it differently. They deliver it chilled, and they deliver it in metal containers. Almost everywhere else, you get it in plastic and you get it room temperature. They also filter their water, and they pre-chill everything. They pre-chill the syrup, they pre-chill everything. So it's like cold. And they've also set up the ratio of syrup to water so to account for the melting ice. So it's like this, just a couple details. And it's not like the ratio is way off. It's not really different, but they've just paid attention to a few details, and there's something about the straws too, like the size of the straws, is they're different. And they figured out like this size straw produces this interface with your tongue, and it's more, people like it better. So they haven't reconstructed Coca-Cola. They haven't reinvented everything. But they did pay attention to a few details. And there are probably a few details as far as like the conversations, the lighting, the seating, creative ideas to help people open up. There's a way you could come to a conversation, like you get together and like you're just going to have a conversation. You just say, hey guys, let's just share our lives, And that's fine too. But that might be closer to the bare minimum. Now, I'm not saying that's bad though. I just did that last night with my group. Let's just do high lows. Just go around the room. Yeah. Just kind of share your high lows. But that's bare minimum planning on my part. Sometimes I might go, how can I just make it a little bit more exceptional? Think of creative ways to help people open up and share or be vulnerable. And I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I don't need to put the pressure on myself to reinvent how conversations work. It's just, if I just think about a few details, does that serve the life of the microchurch? I don't want to check the box called let's have conversation about life. What I want to do is how can I set the conversation up to serve the life of the microchurch? And again, sometimes I get that right, and sometimes I get it wrong. But I think if we're headed towards that target, I think that's a way in which we can appropriately interface the organization. We're going to have a conversation. We're going to sit down. We're going to debrief something. We're going to confront some kind of idol in our lives, whatever. We're going to worship Jesus. It's like, can I think of some details that, not reinventing communion, but is there a way to I could set the table where this really does serve the life of the microchurch versus just bare minimum, we're checking a box type stuff, So that would be one of the first things, So I don't know if there's anything from that you're picking up on or.
Yeah, I mean,
you're just like, dude, this is ridiculous.
No, I mean, first of all, I'm just blown away that this is why McDonald's and all their Cokes taste so much better than anything else.
It was like a mystery. It was like an industry mystery for a long time. And then they came out like, yeah, it's this whole thing.
Yeah, I feel like my whole universe has been unlocked just by talking about that. But it's interesting because I do remember you talking about, we talk about around here, just like the temptation to wing it. And you don't want to just wing it. Like you can't just wing it. Don't wing it. Like do plan something, And there is a way to plan in such a way that it does actually serve the life of the microchurch. And I think perhaps one of the ways that one of the reasons why microchurch leaders sometimes struggle to plan. One is just busy, right? Like a lot of these people, it's not their primary thing. It's not their work of their lives. It's just, I don't know, on top of having a full-time job and having a family and trying to, whatever, have some sort of social life, there's also this thing that you've started. And so it can feel like, all right, there's busyness involved. But then also, yeah, it's like, how do you do it in such a way where it's not overwhelming or a burden or something? And I think that's like the question that sometimes microchurch leaders feel. And so maybe it's easier to just like, all right, because I don't want it to be so heavy on me, we're just going to treat it casually. And it's, I don't know, that way it's not a burden. And I don't know, there's just, I wonder if there's a way to shift that in the minds or the life of a microchurch leader.
Yeah. Well, I think taking the pressure off, because again, if you say, man, this conversation, this Bible study is the microchurch, right? And if I don't plan this perfectly, then I've failed the microchurch. But it's like, no, you're serving the microchurch. This Bible study serves the microchurch. Some that is does reduce anxiety. And when we reduce anxiety, inappropriate anxiety, then we can be more creative. And it doesn't feel like a burden. Even if it's work, it won't feel like a burden. You know, even though there's work to be done to plan something or put together something or make a phone call, it doesn't feel like work because, this may go well, it may go poorly, but then the performance anxiety that we often associate with planning things or running events or programs or Bible studies, it's just flipped. Mm-hmm. It's like, this dinner might be really tasty and it might not be tasty, you know, but the family doesn't fall apart because the dinner sucked, you know?
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we put the anxiety on the dinner and we say, man, this dinner has to be perfect. Otherwise the microchurch sucks. Otherwise the kingdom of God will not advance. It's like, whoa, chill. Like, whoa, you know? So you don't want the dinner to suck. Also, it's okay, you know? So I think that right there already helps people. But I would say maybe the second thing as far as how to have the appropriate relationship, how to organize something in a way that serves the organic does connect with this is that sometimes we do make it a burden, often as microchurch leaders. And I would say you need to make it more like a potluck. Again, going with that metaphor with family, it's like, I have been with hosts and even microchurch leaders where it's like literally everything is on them to plan and to organize and to get and to cook and to set up and to clean. And like every element is really on them. And it's a burden for them. And it's just like, holy smokes, man, like, share the burden, make it a potluck, share the load. It's a wonderful way to develop others by asking for help. Like family does that, you know, include their ideas and let them lift the load with you, you know? So share locations, share leadership, ask for prayerful insight. So there's different appropriate levels of inclusion of people and asking people for help. You obviously don't want to abdicate responsibility, but you do want to share, you know, and inviting folks to bring food, but also, you know, lead the worship time or facilitate Bible study and just finding ways to share that. Also, if the pressure is not on the event to be like perfect, you know, sometimes leaders, they put the burden on themselves because they want a particular quality. And they know if they share the load, the quality might be a little more inconsistent or might not be the way that they would do it. And that's okay. It's got to be okay. You know, they're going to cook a different type of meal, or the cookies are going to be a little bit more crispy and you like yours chewy. like, okay, there's going to be some differences, you know, like in our microchurch, we've just started sharing a load of, so we'll start with communion now, which I've never done before, like starting with communion, but that'll be like our call to like, hey, it's like, you know, goes from like social, hey, how you doing, catching up, to like, no man, like it's serious Jesus time. So it's like pretty much from 0 to 60, you know, yeah. We're just like, it's a, like, all right, body and blood of Jesus. And I just said, hey, all you have to do is like, you know, you don't have to preach a sermon or anything like that, but just call us to the body, call us to the table of our Lord, you know, and then use Corinthians 11, right? As the main text for calling us the elements, right? But it's been amazing to watch people, how the different ways that they do call us to the table. And they do it a little bit different than I would do it, you know? And, you know, if you're critical, be like, well, you know, I might be able to do that better. But could I? Really? You know, like that serves the family. Distributing that responsibility actually serves the family better than me just doing it the way I think is best every week, you know? And it's been really amazing for our community to have that experience. But, you know, it goes from like, man, a burden, like, man, I got to do this every week and I got to think of this call and yeah, I got to get the bread and the juice and all that kind of stuff. But now everybody's participating. So, you know, I just think that's a good example of taking the burden and making it, no, this is potluck. This is party time. This is like us, sharing. And I think the work of a leader is helping to share that load. Like, so instead of you preparing all of the stuff, it's actually, well, my work is actually, how do I share that with other people? And sometimes it does mean that you have to take, you know, extra stuff to do,
right,
as the leader. But it's a good work to do when you go, hey man, you know, I've helped share this load. I've really equipped this person to lead the Bible study. We've done preaching nights, you know, where people had to preach 10-minute sermons. And so we get on the phone with people, say, hey man, you need help with the sermon. Some people didn't, some people did, you know, some people were terrible, some people were amazing, you know, but it was so much fun, and much better than me just getting up and like preaching to everybody. But I'm the most experienced. So I like, would my sermons technically be better? Yeah, probably on a technical level, but it's better for the family. It serves the family better to make it a potluck.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about it from a sense of, okay, I could do this, but it actually serves the family better if I don't. And so how do we serve the family? We invite other people to contribute and to have a seat at the table and to lead the conversation. And yeah, it's just really cool to think about it that way. I've never thought about it that way. And so this is helpful for me. I'm curious, yeah, if there are other ways that people can be thinking about organic or organized systems, not overtaking the organic life, but serving the organic life. What are some of the other ways that people can do that?
Well, I mean, you got to make it culture. And sometimes people talk a lot about culture, but they don't really know what that means. Really, the culture makers are the top 15%. So however you want to measure that, there's just a way that 15% of your group does mission awesome. There's 15% of your group that does worship awesome. There's 15% of your group that does community awesome. So when you're making plans, make plans for the 15%. So when you're thinking about mission, you're not thinking about the laggards. You're thinking about the people that are like, they're awesome, you know? So how can this event, these plans, these conversations serve those people? Now, when you make those plans, you need to make them open-ended, so that it includes the rest of the group, because you're not going to be in the 15% of all those things either. You're like, but I want to be a part of this conversation too, right? So obviously you're going to include everybody, but the plans bias towards serving the 15%. If you bias, if the plan for worship, for community, for mission is biased towards the 15%, that they're just like, man, you guys are inspiring us, you know, like you guys just are rock stars. If you bias towards that, but include everybody else, then it will be culture.
Mm.
Right. But if you bias towards the laggards, well, how do we get everybody else up to the 15%? Well, guess what your culture is? Your culture is the last 15%, the people that don't do it, who are not really followers of Jesus. They're nominal folks that are a part of your microchurch, you know?
Wow.
So you want to include everybody. So don't get me wrong. You know, include everybody.
Yeah.
But, and again, you're going to have to figure out, okay, what does that mean? But if you sit down with 10, 15 people and you get to know them good enough, you'll be like, yeah, you know, these two, three people, like they just do mission. They're awesome, man. If we could all be like them, it'd be great. You know, Well, what meetings, what events, what Bible studies, conversations serve them?
You know?
Same thing with worship. Like, man, your heart for worship, these two or three people, their hearts for worship just like are just beautiful and amazing. You know, what times of worship, what conversations, Bible studies serve them, you know? So that's one way to lean into culture formation at a microchurch level that I think is maybe a little more practical than oftentimes when we talk about, like, you got to make a culture and stuff like that. No one really ever talks about it. Even this is still like, how do you measure that? I just know that if you sit down in the group, you go, yeah, these three people, community, like, they're just excellent at community. They're excellent at loving one another, loving other Christians. They're amazing. Okay, then what events, programs, conversations, whatever you're planning, whatever organizational stuff that you have to do, how does it serve these people? You know, I think that's just going to be a much better way for cultural formation of the group, that still is serving the organic, the what God has given you organically. Yeah. But it's a way to serve them, but then kind of challenge, bring up, train, equip the rest of the group. And then the last thing, just really quick, is just, you know, be shaped by rhythms. So just a little bit of what Rich Lamb calls like foresight. You know, you just need to have foresight. You know, what's coming down on the calendar. What are the rhythms that God has given us as a family? You know, some families, they, you know, they're on the phone talking to each other at a very regular frequency. Some don't. So what are the rhythms of, you know, it's birthdays, it's holidays. Mm-hmm. What are your weekly rhythms? What are your periodic rhythms? What are your holiday rhythms? You know, So just like having foresight for rhythms, but rhythms, again, that serve the family. You know, so rhythms that don't lean into false religion or traditions that have no power, but rhythms that actually serve the family, you know, and that just kind of makes sense throughout the year and through different seasons. So I think that would serve the, you know, cultivating tables of delight.
Wow. Yeah. I'm just thinking about the, I love the choice of image and the shifting, right? So it's like there's a burden, but then there's potluck. So it's family, it's relational, it's social. There's, of course, there's rhythm. And so rhythm is something that's, you know, a little bit more fluid and organic. It you feel that. Or even the talking about planning around the 15%. I mean, that's not exactly what you called it. I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to pull up my notes and that I wrote down and that you have culture. It's like culture isn't something that's just something that's, you know, science, but it is organic and it develops and it's a structure. And so just so many great images there. And I love a lot of what you said, especially around, you know, that 15% and how that shapes your culture, because I don't know. I guess Yeah, like you said, we talk about culture often, and any leadership circle will talk about culture and how you need to form it. But the question of how and what that looks like, I mean, to think about, okay, yeah, what serves, what conversations, what events, what things would be best for these people who are the top 15% in this particular area? I feel like that question unlocks so much of what microchurch leaders can be planning or thinking about and how they go about developing structure around their microchurch or serving the organic life of the microchurch. And so, man, I just think all of that was stellar. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Mind blown, mind stretched.
It is indeed. So I love that. I mean, I guess maybe that's as good a place of any to sort of land this plane. Like, as microchurch leaders are thinking about their microchurch, you can be sitting with those four questions and those four sort of images of, you know, of course we talked about burden and potluck. We talked about checkbox versus culture. We talked about randomness versus rhythms. Like, you know, the randomness is organic, but the rhythm, it's both organic, but there's a little bit of structure. I think that's beautiful. And also, you know, the minimum versus making it exceptional. Like, how do you just elevate it just a little bit? Just a little bit of thought that goes a long way. And so I think those are four things that microchurch leaders, if you're listening, you could be thinking about, sort of wrestling with, and organizing, planning, and forecasting for your microchurch with that. And so, Jeremy, thank you so much. I mean, is there anything else that, like, as you're thinking about this, that you're like, oh man, I really want microchurch leaders to think about this or hold on to this as they're sort of walking away from this episode and conversation?
Well, the last thing is always that a good father gives good gifts to his children who ask. And so if we're going to keep the family metaphor, the microchurch is not your family. It belongs to him, and he is a good father who gives good gifts. So as we're trying to figure out, like, how do we do all this stuff? How do we be the church? How do we organize all this? How do I get creativity? How do I have all the margins I need in my life or whatever? Well, ask a good father for a good gift. Like, let him be the one who is actually the head of the household. And any way that we can kind of find our way into that space through repentance and through worship and through loving one another, and that's going to serve us well.
Wow. That's great. Yeah. I don't have anything to add to that. I'll leave it there. So, I mean, if you're listening to this episode and you're wondering, okay, well, what do I do with this? Where do I go from here? I do actually want to point you somewhere. So this comes out of some work that we had done recently at our own leadership summit for our network. And we actually have diagnostics for each of the MDNA elements that pertains to microchurches. And so I do want to point you that way. So you can go to tampaunderground.com/resources. On that page, you will find a whole bunch of resources over the course of time that we've put up there. I mean, I think we just added something that Jeremy had done around microchurches and kids. And so if you're thinking about that, that's something that's there. But if you scroll down to, I believe, leadership resources, you'll find something called microchurch diagnostics. And that is where you will find the diagnostics for each of those MDNA elements as it pertains to microchurches. So tampaunderground.com/resources, scroll down to leadership resources, and you'll find microchurch diagnostics, and we'll include the link in the description. And so thank you so much for tuning into this season. It has been an absolute blast to have these conversations and to talk to some of these different guests around microchurches and microchurch life. And man, until next time, we'll keep you posted about when season 5 is on the way. Crazy to think, 5 seasons already. And so until next time, microchurches.